From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last night, shortly before midnight. It was the moment that Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders closed his speech to the Democratic National Convention. For his supporters who had hoped he would produce his own Ted Cruz moment, thwarting the nominee and his party, they didn't get it. Instead, Sanders closed by saying that Hillary Clinton would make an outstanding president and he wants everyone to support her. At that moment, a longtime Sanders supporter in Rochester turned off his television. Kevin Sweeney didn't want to listen to the talking heads, the analysts. He wanted to take it all in and make up his own mind, and it had been agonizing. He's given so much to the Sanders cause and campaign, like many other Sanders supporters, and he doesn't really feel much love for Hillary Clinton. Now, if Sweeney had been watching MSNBC, he would have seen a parade of Sanders delegates on the floor of the convention tell the cameras that they were not moved. They would not support Hillary Clinton. But the polls indicate these are the outliers, that the vast majority of Sanders supporters have already moved into Clinton's camp. And as Sweeney digested the Sanders speech and the moment and the election ahead, he decided that, well, we're about to find out. Earlier in the campaign, Kevin Sweeney came on this program alongside Josh Keaton, also a Democratic activist, but an enthusiastic Clinton supporter. And we asked them to come back during the convention to explain where they are, their minds had changed at all, and where their party is. So let me go ahead and welcome now. Kevin Sweeney is an organizer, well, was, is, for the Bernie Sanders campaign, and now, really, in many ways, the Bernie Sanders platform. And that's what we'll talk about in many ways. Kevin, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
And Josh Keaton is a Democratic activist who is still supporting Hillary Clinton. Nice to see you, Josh.
Thank you, Evan.
We're also going to be checking in with Karen DeWitt, our Capitol Bureau correspondent, who was in Cleveland last week, Philadelphia this week. She has been in an event with Governor Andrew Cuomo that started around 12:30. If he was on time, and he'd be the first governor in history to be on time, but we'll see. And she's going to check in at some point when she frees up there to weigh in there. But let me start with Kevin Sweeney. You know, you watched that speech. You went into that speech still essentially feeling undecided in your mind?
Yes, absolutely.
And you go into that speech last night. You turned off the TV immediately after, and why did you do that?
Because I didn't want to be distracted from what was said in the in Bernie's speech and in Elizabeth Warren's speech and in Cory Booker's speech. I really
missed Michelle Obama, the best of the night.
She was amazing.
Yeah, she
absolutely
was.
Inspiring. I did listen to her as well, but her speech was a little bit different than the other three,
I take the point.
But I, you know, I heard the talking heads after Corey. I heard them after Michelle. I heard them after Elizabeth Warren. I said, you know what? I'm sick of listening to you guys trying to figure out what's going on. I want to decide that for myself. And I think that the words that Bernie spoke last night were the most important ones he spoke in the entire campaign.
And so you decided?
My decision was to continue to follow Bernie. And I trust that man and the platform especially that he outlined. He spent 10 minutes really just laying out the changes in the Democratic National Convention's platform that would not have happened were not for the hundreds of thousands of Sanders volunteers, donors, et cetera, and realize our only hope is to work within the system to effect the changes we need. So I will vote for Hillary Clinton. It does not mean I am a fan of hers. It does not mean I changed my opinion. It means that I'm following the leader who brought us to this point in time in American history.
I want to ask Kevin to respond to a couple of things, then we'll get Josh's take as well. First of all, let's listen to what Bernie Sanders said just this morning. He spoke at a breakfast for the California delegation of the Democratic National Convention. And once again, he renewed his call to elect Hillary Clinton. And once again, he was booed for saying that. Here's how Bernie Sanders reacted to the California delegation when they were booing the idea of electing Hillary Clinton.
It's easy. It is easy to boo, but it is harder to look your kids in the face who would be living under a Donald Trump presidency.
Sanders is making the point there that he, I think, is essentially tired, like a lot of people, of a false equivalency, that both Clinton and Trump are the same. They're part of the system. They're a machine. Sanders is saying they're not the same. And even if you don't like Hillary Clinton, she's not Donald Trump. Do you agree with that?
I totally agree with that, yes. She's
okay.
Not Donald Trump.
Then let me read an email that I got this morning from a listener named Alex. Evan, I don't understand why Sanders supporters are pretending there aren't other options. There are. Here's the best one. Jill, and he says Jill Green, it's Jill Stein. Jill Stein in the Green Party. She's much closer to Sanders than Clinton is. If you vote Clinton, you are abandoning the Sanders revolution. If you vote Green, you are continuing it. I'm voting Green, and I would vote Green even if I lived in a swing state. Kevin?
No, and I understand that. As a matter of fact, when Bernie first came out and endorsed Hillary, I made a $27 donation to Jill Stein's
campaign. Was that a rule? I mean, does it have to be $27?
No. I never actually made a $27 donation to Bernie before. I made donations, but never in that amount. But I was trying to make a point that day. And I know at least 600 other Bernie supporters did the exact same thing. Where I don't, you know, I this is... 40 years. I've been since 1976, so I've been. Well, how many presidential elections have I voted in?
That's 10 elections. 10. 40 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So I look at it and just quite frankly see. I've seen third party. I remember Ross Perot's run. I remember all the. I remember Pat Paulson's run. We have to be realistic. If 15%, they don't garner. Third parties don't garner 15% in any of the polls. They're not going to be at the table. And as all Bernie Sanders supporters know, Bernie's campaign, when he started out, was marginalized. He was not included in the programs. If they were frustrated then, just wait until they get behind another candidate. It's going to grow. No, I think our strength, I think the supporters of Sanders' progressive platform strength lies in our unity, not necessarily unifying blindly behind Secretary Clinton as candidate, but uniting in our ideas and our beliefs and what is best for this country, and to continue to stay active throughout not just campaigns, but every day of the year to drive the programs that we need in place in our federal government.
Josh Keaton is a Clinton supporter who has said for weeks that eventually we would see Clinton and Sanders on the stage together, that it would go a long way toward assuaging some of the concerns of Sanders supporters. And yet, Josh, a lot of the headlines early in the day yesterday were about the booing, the Sanders supporters there. The polling doesn't really reflect that is reflective of Sanders supporters at large. But do you think the media is doing a poor job then of portraying it? Or how do you sort of evaluate where the party is right now?
I think there's a rich tradition inside the Democratic Party of activism. And that activism takes a lot of forms. This is hardly the first Democratic convention that you've seen a lot of booing and a lot of activism and protests. I dare to say, I think all of them. I don't think in 2008 there were, but I think in 2012 there were. And certainly in 2004 there were, and going back to 68, which everyone has kind of been pointing to for some reason this time. That was sort of the hallmark of that movement. But this is a pretty common thing inside the Democratic Party. You know, we've always been a party of the big tent, and we have a lot of folks that have been Democrats for a long time that believe in more social justice, some folks that believe in more in some other aspects of the party. So it has always been sort of herding cats to get Democrats together on things. But I think that what we've demonstrated, particularly at the national level over the last few cycles, is that when we do get into game time, and it's September, it's October, it's time to get unified, to get a president elected, we've been very effective in doing that. You know, I'm gratified to hear Kevin come around, and I think that's kind of the calculus that I think that
he didn't say he loves Hillary Clinton.
I'm not asking him to love Hillary Clinton. and I think that, you know, politics is always more than just one person. It's not about electing Hillary Clinton. It's not about electing anybody in particular. It's about electing the candidate that's going to advance the agenda as much as possible. And I think that if the choice that we're facing is between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, it's just a no-brainer. I can't imagine how anybody who comes from progressive stock could look at that choice and realize, you know, I'm just going to sit this out. I'm just going to allow Donald Trump to walk in, or at least I'm going to keep my voice out, a voice that would typically advance the progressive agenda. I'm going to leave that voice out and not be included.
All right, listeners, you want to call the program, where are you on this issue? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Dave on Twitter says, this election is too important for protest votes. So that's where Dave is, as I presume, a Democratic voter. But Simeon in Rochester is first up on the phone. Go ahead, Simeon.
Yes, hi, Evan. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am someone who lives in Rochester. I'm a rabbi, and I am a proud Democrat. I always have been. But And I will ultimately, with great ambivalence, vote for Hillary Clinton because of my perception of what's at stake here in terms of the future of the country. But having said that, I think we need to really focus on how vile the emails were that were leaked over the weekend that came from Brad Marshall, a high-level staffer at the Democratic National Committee. He not only was clearly helping Hillary Clinton, but he made an effort to use Bernie Sanders' religion against him by saying, well, as a Jew, maybe in states like Kentucky and West Virginia, we should ask him questions about, does he believe in God? In other words, to highlight the fact that he's not one of us. You know, as people who are accusing Donald Trump of dividing the country, engaging in the politics of polarization, I think that the content and the strategy of those emails is beyond vile. And to me, I'm just at a loss to describe.
Simon, let me just jump in here, and please stand in line, because I have a question for you, and then we're gonna ask our panel to respond. The email that you reference is an email in which a Democratic staff member did point out that there were some who thought essentially Bernie Sanders might actually be an atheist, that he was sort of
right.
Some of his rhetoric is more about, my religion is loving and serving everyone, you know,
right.
And no question, atheists felt like this was just another anti-atheist meme. It's hard enough for atheists to get elected in politics. And we're actually planning to have a discussion with Rochester-based atheists later this week about that very issue, because it's still very, very difficult. There's a barrier for atheists. But Bernie Sanders said this week he's not an atheist. And who cares, by the way, if he is, or if he's Jewish in his faith and not just his sort of ethnic culture. So... I think everybody agreed that email was pretty vile. I mean, I asked Kevin Sweeney before the hour began. That was the first one Kevin pointed to. But let me ask you, you used the term emails. What else, what stands out to you that bothered you, Simeon?
Well, I hear what you're saying. I think that was the one that really, really struck at me, because it seemed to be an effort to just be divisive by underscoring the Sanders as a secular Jew is alien to the values of people in states like Kentucky and West Virginia. I think in terms of other emails, it was just the clear attempt to align and to promote Hillary Clinton. But it was the content specifically of that one.
Yeah, I hear
that. Was, and also, when I heard Hillary Clinton's interview on Sunday night at 60 Minutes, you know, she was asked, why do you think there's so many people feel that you're corrupt and just don't like you? There was no effort on her part to be reflective or to really accept any sort of responsibility. And I will vote for her, but she blamed it on the sort of the, not her, she didn't say right wing conspiracy, but on the effort of other people to blame her for things that were not legitimate. If the Democrats are going to win the presidential campaign, Hillary needs to grow and as a candidate and have more, not be so tone deaf to the fact that some of this, not all of it, is the result of certain patterns of behavior that conform to a narrative that people find troubling. That's a real issue. That's not a conspiracy that's being inflicted on her by others.
All right, Simeon, thank you for the phone call. I'm going to start with you, Josh. He said generally beyond that one email that I think everybody agrees was problematic, he said the emails reflect a bias on behalf of the DNC to support Hillary and to try to, I've heard people say they were trying to rig the game for Hillary. And I know you've pushed back. I've seen you online pushing back a little bit on that. How do you feel about the emails that you saw?
Well, to the email that the caller referenced, I think we can all agree that was a really foul idea. And I think certainly if it had been followed upon, that would be a really, really terrible campaign tactic. And it would also indicate there would have been coordination. But
yep.
There's been no indication that those folks that were in those emails were coordinating with,
true,
you know, Robbie Mook's team, and there's no indication that there were any resources allocated or anything. You know, I, as has been mentioned a lot of times, it's not all that surprising that lifelong Democrats would stand up behind the lifelong Democrat in the race, and the, as opposed to the gentleman who, although had been progressive, had not been a member of the party for
all that
long.
But they're not supposed to, right, Josh? They're supposed to be part of, well, of a machine that at least says, we want everyone to have a chance here, and then we will support the nominee.
Sure, right. Sure, but I don't see any emails in there that say, we need to make sure we're advancing this position. We need to make sure we're knocking Bernie down. I think you see folks that have been lifelong Democrats sort of saying, hey, let's do this. Hey, let's think about this. Or if I was in that position, I might do this. You did see some emails in there as well that said, well, the chair has said don't get involved. The chair said don't do this. There were a number of emails that indicated that. So, you know, that particular email certainly was very unfortunate, and I think anyone would speak against idle talk, well, idle or active talk, against using religion to divide people. But in general, I have not been very impressed with the emails. They certainly have not indicated to me that they've been that the system was rigged at all.
Now, this is where you and Kevin are going to fight.
Yeah,
but before I get to Kevin, let me just push on one point here. He's referring to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the chair, who has the bedside manner of an anvil. and I would just say that the emails that I read indicated not that the chair is saying don't get involved. The chair is saying keep telling the media that the chair doesn't want to be involved. In other words, we've got to at least keep up this idea that the chair doesn't want to steer the outcome or pull the lever.
Thank you.
I think there are a lot of valid critiques for Debbie Wasserman Schultz's leadership throughout this. I personally have made the point a lot of times on Twitter and on Facebook and to people who have asked me the question, you know, I think there should have been more debates. I don't quite understand why we had to have the debates the day before Christmas and at 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday. I think there definitely were decisions that she made that hurt the party. I'm not convinced that hurt any or helped any single candidate, but it definitely hurt the party because as opposed to the Republicans who were having a very disorganized, you know, sort of insult fest every 2 weeks on prime time on a Thursday when most of America is sitting down watching television, the Democrats kept having their debates once a month at some strange time that was not likely to garner all that much support. And I think that hurt the party because I think it would have been amazing for Democrats to say, while the Republicans are having this really disorganized and you know, issue-free debate, we're going to sit down and we're going to have Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley and we're going to have Hillary Clinton talk about real issues that matter to real people and that are going to make a real impact on people's lives. So that was a decision that I thought was kind of was very unfortunate. I was glad to see that the DNC went back on that. They did add 4 debates by the time it was clear that the campaign was quite close. But again, I didn't see a whole lot in those emails that was indicating to me that there was a lot going on. And the caller's second point was her inability to push back against why she's, you know, so disliked. I mean, I think that she is very much the product of the 1990s still. That you know, the nonstop media pressure that was fed by Ken Starr and Newt Gingrich and the hard right throughout the 1990s to just add more FBI agents, to throw more people at, you know, conspiracies that didn't exist and corruption that wasn't there. When you're in the bubble like that and you have those sorts of enemies going after you day after day, week after week for years, that's going to change you. And I think it's unfortunate to see that, but you know, I can understand where the secretary comes from, where she's going to be very suspicious of the media, where she's going to be very suspicious of the intentions of a lot of folks. I agree. I think it'd be nice for her to come out more often, but I can absolutely understand where it comes from because the 1990s, I think a lot of folks forget, certainly folks my age don't remember it, I don't think, how horrible it must have been to be Hillary Clinton in the 1990s, having every single aspect of your life investigated for absolutely nothing.
Kevin.
You know, I disagree, obviously. I think, let's not even talk about what happened 20 years ago with Hillary. Let's look what happened this week. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is pushed out as the head of the DNC on Sunday. Monday, she was prevented from giving the opening gavel and the closing. In between those two events, we get a public proclamation of how much Hillary absolutely adores Debbie Wasserman Schultz and had nothing but platitudes to her. Now, someone resigns for violating the rules. Hillary goes out and praises them. That's a credibility issue on why people are suspicious of her. But then again, so did President Obama. And I had the same issue with him as well.
So did Bernie Sanders.
No, Bernie Sanders did not give her platitudes for doing a great job. Read his release again. He thanked her for her work, and that was the extent of his announcement,
which is the polite thing to do
because he's trying to play the middle in this situation. But I understand, you know, we go back to the booing. When you have these releases, you have people called me a paranoid conspiracy theorist when I said there was obvious bias. And I said it based upon just the debate schedule that was set up, which you right away mentioned. That was for Hillary's benefit. Hillary never was known to debate very well. She did horribly against Barack Obama, and that's really where she lost the election. She had much more support than he did going in. She had much better name recognition, but she blew it when she was called out on debating. She got a lot better in the last 8 years. But quite frankly, her credibility, and I am concerned. I don't think she is the best candidate for the Democrats to run. I think she has too many liabilities. And I think her response to what was revealed in the WikiLeaks release of the DNC emails, her response by giving Debbie, whether it's an honorary position or an exact position, it takes away from her credibility and it gives the Trump campaign ammunition that they are going to heap on her. She has to get smarter.
All right, two quick things here, and then we go back to the phones here. Kevin, first of all, are you concerned that by harping so much on these emails, you're being manipulated by the people who got the emails in the first place, which might be, as Mike Myers would say in Austin Powers, the Russians? I mean, there's something really weird happening, or at least appears to be. We don't exactly know the source of the leak, but there's a lot of bad signs here, and I'm wondering if you feel, should you be a little careful not to be manipulated by the release of the emails, which seem designed to impact the party that, as you've said, you're going to vote for Hillary Clinton, you want to defeat Donald Trump, the emails seem designed to help Donald Trump. Are you concerned about being manipulated?
No, not at all. I think the more we need more information, there needs to be more openness in government. But I'm not focusing on the emails. I'm focusing on the response to the emails.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that Hillary's campaign will smarten up and see the perception that people get when she did what she did in response to Debbie's resignation.
All right, Josh. So slap in the face. Kevin is saying Bernie Sanders supporters see Hillary Clinton say, hey, Debbie Wasserman Schultz has been wonderful. Thanks for the work that you've done. All of this praise, instead of saying how disappointed you might have been to see the emails, he's felt that was a slap in the face, and a lot of people think another mistake. Was it a mistake?
I think it was an unforced error, in my opinion, yeah. I mean, I certainly, you know, the secretary and Debbie Wasserman Schultz go way back. I mean, Debbie Wasserman Schultz was her co-chair of her 2008 campaign. So they have a very deep relationship, a very long-time relationship. I think given the requirements of the week, given the requirements of the campaign to bring people together and to move forward in a united fashion, I think it was poor optics to issue a statement to say not only laudatory things about her work, which I think is totally valid, but to also say that she's going to have an honorary position on her campaign just seemed gratuitous and unnecessary. But, you know, I think that the emails, we're going to move past them. You know, there was nothing terrible in them. I can understand your perspective that you thought it was indicating of bias. And I think that one of the things that can be done in the future to avoid that is, I think, to have a more inclusive process, to maybe get a different chair in place and to go through the same process we went through on the platform committee and other committees to include the voices of Sanders supporters to choose the next chair that can lead the party forward under the next administration. But we have to really focus on what we saw in the evening and not the afternoon, which was a lot of talk of unity, talking about the issues that matter, talking about a path forward for the Democratic Party. And I think that was the tone of Bernie Sanders' speech. It's going to be the tone of President Clinton's speech tonight, I'm sure, certainly President Obama's speech on Wednesday. And I think when Hillary speaks on Thursday, I think we're going to really be in a very good position as a party.
All right, let me grab some phone calls. Sean in Rochester. Go ahead, Sean. Sean, are you there? Go ahead.
Hello. Hi. I wanted to just make a comment about, give you like some of the history of what's happened with, let me go for a lesser evil. The most classic example is in Germany in 1932. The Social Democrats or the Progressives at that time supported the bourgeois party or the capitalist party, quickly the Democrats, even actually more right-wing party. Von Hindenburg, he is the one who appointed Hitler chancellor, and a few years later, the Chancellor Hitler took power. So in the end, you end up getting the lesser evil and the greater evil in many respects. Throughout the history in America, the same things happen over and over again. If you even just recently, if you look at the Democratic presidents that we've put into office, like Clinton and Obama, you end up getting a lot of the policies of the right being pushed through, such as Obama's deportations, Clinton's passage of the act that ended welfare as we know it, and the crime bill that has incarcerated you know, many, many.
So, Sean, is your position that I understand the history. Are you saying then that you are someone who doesn't see a difference between Trump and Clinton in terms of why you would view them as potentially problematic?
I there's definitely differences, and that's very obvious. But in the end, that's the person as who's the executive has to go along with the rest of the people in the government, the legislature, and in the judicial and all that. So the policies are going to be somewhat different, but not in the end very different. And unless we as progressives build a true alternative with something like the independent run of Jill Stein and the Green Party, that's never going to change. You know, every year when there's a, you know, an election like this, like Nader's campaign in 2000 and 2004, people say, you know, if you don't vote for the Democrat, then you're going to get the Republican elected. But if we never break the Democrats, we're never going to make a real change.
All right, hold on. I'm going to ask Sean and Kevin the same question here, because Sean and Kevin were both people who. Sean, did you support Sanders?
Yeah.
Okay. And now it sounds like you're a Jill Stein supporter. Kevin saying, holding his nose and voting for Clinton. Not feeling great about it, but more concerned about the platform and working within the system. So both Sanders supporters, different plans for November. And here is a comment from a listener named Beth. Quote, "It's easy to take the high road when it's paved with privilege. If Trump wins this election, the people who will be affected the most will be those who don't have the benefit of privilege. Turning a blind eye to that doesn't make you a hero of the people. It means your privilege matters more to you than you thought." End quote. That's from Beth. Sean, she's saying to you, if you think taking the high road is voting for Jill Stein and Trump wins as a result, you are hurting people who have less privilege than you. What do you think?
I would say that in the end, if you really look at who's hurt, people who are most oppressed in this country most in the past 20 years, it's been Democrats and not Republicans. I've already given very evident examples. The only way that we're going to help the people who are truly oppressed is to have an alternative, to have a left alternative to the Democrats, because the Democrats and Republicans have over and over again done things that have continued the oppression of many people within the United States, especially people who are most oppressed.
All right, so Sean, let me just jump in and let Kevin Sweeney respond first. Go ahead, Kevin.
You know, and I understand that, but I am as concerned about the congressional races as I am about the White House. I think in order for any program to work, we need to gain control. The Democrats need to gain control of the Senate and of the House. And without that, no matter who's in the White House, getting progressive policies through are going to be difficult. And I won't say which election, but I did vote for a third party candidate 1 year, and I've kicked myself for doing it ever since. We've got to wake up and just accept the reality, as bitter as it is, that the two established parties basically own the political system in this country. If we can't reform from within, I think especially in the upcoming 4 years, then we have to start a third party. You know, I'm going to agree with you on that one, Sean. We have to get behind it. But to jump into it now and just see what's happened in every other third party run in the 10 elections I voted in, I think is making it easier for Trump. And quite frankly, you know what? I'm with you. Don't blame me if Trump wins. I'll still blame the DNC for what happened at the committee, with the support they were giving, with how they ran Hillary's campaign. As many people say, as the coronation. I think that's where the mistakes were made. And if we do lose the White House, the Democratic National Committee is going to have to be changed or face a third party in the next presidential election.
I think what Sean is speaking to is to reforming the Democratic Party. And he's saying get a third party. But I think the way you get there is by reforming the Democratic Party. I think that Kevin's analysis is correct, that whether we like it or not, we live in a first-past-the-post system, so we're just going to have two parties. There's not really a way to have a third party be successful. But so the way that you enact that change then is to reform the party. And I think that is, if you could distill Bernie Sanders' message down to like a short sentence or a phrase, that would be what it was. It's that, you know, the Democratic Party has moved too far to the center on all these issues, and we have to bring it back to its roots. And I think in two very important ways, both substantively on the issues and also on process, the Democratic Party has made those changes, and they've sought the input of Sanders supporters. They've dramatically reduced the number of superdelegates that are part of the nominating process, which the Sanders campaign had argued made it very difficult to get passed and made it more undemocratic. So they listened to the Sanders critique and made those changes, and then they made platform changes as well.
Huge platform changes.
Yeah, very very substantive platform changes.
For those who haven't followed the platform, Josh, then Kevin, just give me one, two, maybe three items that stand out to you that reflect the impact of the Sanders campaign.
$15 an hour minimum wage, certainly. The renewed emphasis on reforming our campaign finance laws. You see Hillary Clinton now on the stump calling for a constitutional amendment to overturn the Citizens United case. Debt-free college. You know, a lot of things that Bernie Sanders was standing for were included. And, you know, that's what democracy looks like. That's how it works. That you get two groups that sort of have the same objective. How do we get there together? We're going to find a way to get there together, and we're going to make it work. And so what's great about the platform is that that is a document of accountability. Now, usually the platform is sort of a perfunctory exercise where we're just going to sort of look where we were 4 years ago. What are the issues that are prevalent now? Let's just update them a little bit. It's taking more of a focus now because of the real substantive issues between the two candidates. But, you know, in the spirit of democracy and in the true spirit of the Democratic Party, those two groups got together and found a way to move forward. And I think that that platform is going to be adhered to with a vigor that I think we don't usually see out of a administration.
Well, you know, and I think that's the big, you know, and that's what I want to say to my fellow Sanders supporters. We all remember in the debates anytime Glass-Steagall came up and how the Frank Dodd bill was just defended and defended by Hillary. You know, Glass-Steagall, an updated version of Glass-Steagall, is part of the platform. That shows that Hillary Clinton had to move off of her stance, and that's why I am going forward and making that support. You know, Hillary was very quick to point out that, yes, I would vote differently on Iraq. Yes, I would vote differently on this. But so we have Glass-Steagall, which to me is the basis, that and Citizens United, to fix the key problems that result in a lot of the others. But I also think the health care issue, that was another situation, and that's not Hillary. That's Hillary circling back around to her original position in 1992. You know, universal health care is a must. So we have to continue to drive these issues. And thanks, Josh, because I've heard so many people say, the platform doesn't mean anything. I view it the same as you. It's a record of accountability. It's something the progressives and the other activists can use to continue to drive our platform forward.
All right, let's get our only break of the hour, and you're hearing Kevin Sweeney and Josh Keaton. They've been on the program earlier this year, Kevin supporting Bernie Sanders, Josh supporting Hillary Clinton. We asked them to come back during the convention. We didn't know where Kevin was going to fall as a former Sanders supporter. In fact, he just said he decided late last night, after listening to Sanders, that he is going to go ahead and vote for Hillary Clinton, even if he doesn't love the idea, but he is going to do that. I've heard some Sanders supporters writing to me saying, oh, you stacked the deck with a Sanders supporter who's now in the bag for Clinton. Kevin Sweeney is not in the bag for Hillary Clinton. I know you're laughing at that.
Definitely not.
Josh is going to say not in the bag. But also fair to say, look, I'm taking your calls and your emails, no matter where you are. We're trying to open the conversation. But the polls show the vast majority of Sanders supporters are planning to vote for Hillary Clinton. That's not the host making something up. I'm just looking at polling. But let's continue the conversation after this short break on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections. Maybe you've heard of the tiny house trend. Is it something you'd be interested in? A house with 200 or 300 square feet total? Could you downsize your life to fit? Is it practical? How expensive is it? Who's building these things and where? We'll talk about all of that and more as we discuss tiny houses on Wednesday. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Laura writes to us on Twitter, we need to build from the bottom up at the state and local level first. You can't start with the president and then expect results. You got to work locally. And Kevin Sweeney's been saying that's part of the plan, is to work in other elections as well, not just focusing on a presidential candidate, right?
No, the offices that we open for the progressives in Rochester is going nowhere. We are actually running candidates for Rochester City Council, and we are going to continue to be very active in party politics in Rochester. We have to do that. We need a majority in Congress. We just do.
Chris writes to us, the Democratic platform will only be pursued if Bernie's followers actually show up on Election Day the next 3 years to force change. It's another example. But then we've got, well, let me read an email and we'll take a call here. Craig writes to us, I cannot in good conscience support Ms. Clinton in light of the proof of corruption in the political system as it is today. An honest person would not accept the nomination, knowing there were fingers on the scale deciding who should win. I am convinced those in the Democratic Party understand the depth of disgust many feel toward the system. Trump is unattractive on just about every front, and I am not voting for him. My solution is to write in Sanders. That's from Craig. Josh, I know you have been sort of tired of people implying that any bias at the DNC tipped the scales, changed the outcome. Do you think it changed the outcome in any way?
No, not at all. Again, that's not excusing some of the behavior. I think some of the emails were impolitic, but someone needs to show me an example of where the scales were tipped. Is there an email in here that says, you know what, we're only going to have these debates at weird times and only a couple of them because we don't want to expose Hillary Clinton because her debating is lousy?
Yeah, but it wasn't just the debates. It was the voter suppression. It was over 100,000 people being removed from the voter rolls in New York. These people are actually, their anger is completely justified. The only point I disagree with them on is we're not going to be successful fighting this and fixing this from the outside. We've got to have a seat at the table.
But Kevin, we're looking at Sanders' performances with Black and Latino voters was terrible. Not nearly enough to win a Democratic primary. I'm not saying it should have been. I'm just looking at the numbers. So I don't see. I understand the concern that there was sort of something out of balance at the DNC or the way that the Sanders supporters feel. But do you think the outcome would have been different if things would have been, if you would have seen the changes you wanted?
Well, let me ask you this, Evan. Years ago when we were doing, before we got computer voting, we were doing paper ballots. And exit polls versus paper ballots, margin of error, 2%. This year we were seeing 8% consistently. Why? That's my question. I think, you know, no matter who wins president, we need to step up and create a committee to investigate why this is happening with electronic voting. Again, my position is, yeah, I'm not happily going in and pulling the lever for Hillary, but I do it knowing I have to do that in order to ensure, one, we get a Democrat in the White House and a Democratic Congress. That is the only way we can change from within the system.
All right, Josh, real quick, and then I'm going to bring in Karen DeWitt. Go ahead, Josh.
Well, in terms of the voter suppression, I know that there's a couple big examples that are always brought up is New York State, where in Brooklyn there were 120,000 folks that were taken off the rolls.
In Maricopa County, where they cut polling sites to 20%.
And it was the Republican legislature that led that charge. It wasn't the Democratic committee that did that. And again, even in New York State, that Brooklyn was an area that went 20 points for Hillary Clinton. So if it was somehow the DNC sort of doing stuff, that was really the wrong place for them to be taking voters off the rolls because those were folks that were voting for Hillary Clinton. In terms of the polling, I've heard...
Not if it was selective elimination.
That implies a level of organization.
Guys, I don't want to get down in the weeds on this, but go ahead, Josh.
Well, that implies a level of organization within the Democratic Party that anyone who's an active Democrat would find sort of laughable.
Okay, what you're seeing, Josh, is you've got Kevin Sweeney saying he is going to vote for Hillary Clinton, but you've got to build back trust with Sanders supporters, and that's going to take some time.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. It definitely is. And I think that involving them in the process from here on out is a great way to do that. I think that this really typifies the way the Democratic Party works, is that, we do want to be the Big Ten party. We want to be the party that comes together, and that if you have a bunch of folks that have the same objectives and ideas, that we should come together and make sure there's a way forward. And that does include, I will say again and echo what Kevin said, It includes not just voting every 4 years. You have to vote every year. You have to vote for the smallest, most insignificant seeming race. You have to vote for every single race and get progressive Democrats elected everywhere. Because if we just have the president, it basically means that they can nominate a Supreme Court judge. I mean, they do a lot, don't get me wrong. But in terms of the really, really big stuff, they're going to be hamstrung by Congress. So it's so important that you talk to friends and allies that are in these swing states, get them to come out, get them to vote, and get them to support candidates at the state and local level. A really big thing coming up is redistricting in 2020. And the reason why the Republican Party runs Congress today is not because they get more votes than Democrats do. Democrats consistently get more votes on the aggregate for congressional seats than Republicans do. But the reason why they win is because they've managed to win state legislatures. They've won every single state legislature in all these swing states, whether it's, you know, Wisconsin, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and they've managed to draw districts that result in that cause 51-49 Democrat-Republican voting into 13 Republican seats and 5 Democratic seats. Mm-hmm. And that's happening all over the place. So it is vitally important that people make those connections. And I think it's important that Sanders supporters, Clinton supporters, everyone understands the vital need to get involved in every single race.
All right, let me bring in Karen DeWitt. She's on the line with us. She is our Capitol Bureau correspondent who was in Cleveland last week, Philadelphia this week. Everyone, Karen is saying that my hometown, Cleveland, was a lot easier logistically. Do you agree?
Oh, yes, absolutely it was. But, you know, I know that I did really like Cleveland. It was really nice. But honestly, Evan, a lot of Republicans didn't show up at the GOP convention. So for that reason, it was much less crowded. And everybody who's anybody connected with the Democratic Party is here in Philly. So that's partly why it's just mobbed.
Yeah.
And it's also about, you know, 20 degrees hotter. So that makes a difference.
Everyone's ornery. I get it. So, but Karen, did you get a chance to hear from Governor Cuomo today? Where have you been today so far?
I did. In fact, it's pretty amazing. Here it is, day two at Hillary Clinton's convention. I'm still reporting on Bernie Sanders. at the New York State delegation breakfast, Governor Cuomo made a surprise appearance with Senator Sanders. We just spoke to Cuomo now. He was at another event, and he said he wanted to unify the party, and that's why he did it. But it's pretty interesting. This is Hillary Clinton's home state delegates breakfast, and everybody was cheering, yelling for Bernie, and the fact that he even appeared there, I found that pretty extraordinary.
And I'm
just going to say, one of the things I'm just wondering is, and this is just, you know, speculating, maybe Cuomo thinks if things don't go well with Hillary, he's going to be Bernie Sanders' heir for progressive ideas and values. It was really something.
I don't think our panelists in studio agree with that for half a second, but I don't know. I wouldn't want to infer. Well, Kevin will state very clearly. Anyway, Karen, let me also ask you this, because when we watch conventions on television, obviously it's different than being there on the floor. You know, we're hearing, sometimes you don't get the full picture. Sometimes things seem really disruptive when they're more placid or vice versa. So I want to ask you about a moment that Chris Matthews on MSNBC said changed the tenor of the evening last night, and see if you agree. It was when Sarah Silverman, comedian, was speaking, and she was speaking after Al Franken and before Paul Simon, but Paul Simon was getting ready to perform, and he had some trouble getting ready, so they told Sarah Silverman she had to stretch. Now, she had already said to the crowd, "I'm a Bernie Sanders supporter. I was with him in the primary. I'm proud of him, but now I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter." That got a mixed response, but when she had to stretch, she went off script, and this is the moment that Chris Matthews said sort of changed the direction of the tenor of the evening. Sarah Silverman talking directly to the Sanders supporters who were booing her.
Can I just say, to the Bernie or bust people, you're being ridiculous.
Okay, Kevin Sweeney, first of all, as a Sanders supporter, what did you make of that comment?
You know, Sarah should stay to the script. I think it was just like, you know, the platitudes given to Debbie Wasserman. It was a bonehead thing to say. It's not, you don't unify people by insulting them.
Okay, and Josh, you're someone who wants to see unity, but what did you make of that moment?
She's a comedian. She's not a party operative. She's been a loyal Democrat her whole life. If you look at what she's been saying for decades, it's been
Senator Keaton, were you at home pumping your fist when she did that?
I can honestly tell you that I was putting my children in bed at that point.
You are made for politics. You can dodge any question. Time. Oh, wow. All right. Well, Karen DeWitt, did you agree with Chris Matthews on this? Good.
I actually didn't think that. It was actually sort of watching them. You could tell Al Franken and Sarah Silverman, or they were stand-up comics at one time, had played in, like, bars where everybody was paying no attention and booing them because they knew how to riff. But, no, I don't think, especially talking to some of the Bernie delegates here this morning, I don't think that that went over that well, being told that they're ridiculous when it was something they sincerely believed in. I think what changed the hall was Michelle Obama's speech. Yeah. That was really amazing, and that sort of brought people together in a more positive way and sort of changed the tone and set it up for Elizabeth Warren and then for Bernie Sanders, where, you know, a lot of people are very emotional over thinking the loss of the movement or a defeat, or, you know, it was just an emotional moment for everybody there, I think.
Yeah, that's such a good point, Karen, because, you know, I noticed something last night. You know how unassailable Michelle Obama's speech was? Not even Jill Stein attacked her during it. And Jill Stein was attacking everyone on Twitter during every moment of every speech. And she laid off for about 40.
Right?
Yeah, it really does. But Karen, now, before I let you go, what's the plan for coverage today? What's on your schedule, and what do you have coming up?
Well, I've been chasing Governor Cuomo around. He was just at an LGBT event talking about New York being one of the first states to have gay marriage. He's going to go talk to a pro-Israeli group. He's going to be on the convention floor tonight. But he just told us he doesn't know when his speaking spot is. And he sort of gave a pitch to us reporters. He said, you know, I'd really like to speak Thursday night. So I don't know if he wanted us to go tell the convention officials or what. But it sounds like he doesn't have his speaking slot down. So I'd probably be focusing on that because that's more my job. You know, the Nationals, NPR, PBS do a great job with the national stuff. And my job is to see, you know, what are the New Yorkers thinking? And how is our New York governor being received? And, you know, focusing on that aspect of it.
Karen, thanks so much for taking the time for us here on the talk show. I know we'll talk to you later this week. It's going to be a busy one, and you're doing fabulous work for us. Thank you.
Well, thanks. It's lots of fun.
Karen DeWitt reporting from Philadelphia, Cleveland last week, Philadelphia this week. Got time for a few more listener comments. Denise writes to us, hi, Evan. Last night, watching Bernie supporters cry as he spoke, I had a thought. When Hillary conceded in 2008, she had one last rally, the famous 18 million crack speech. And this rally let her supporters celebrate the candidate and mourn the loss. And there was time to heal. Bernie supporters didn't have a similar moment until last night. And his supporters' feelings are most likely very raw. This is tough all around. Thanks for a great show. That's from Denise. Kevin, you think she makes a good point there?
Oh, absolutely. I actually, quite frankly, I wasn't familiar with Hillary's post-loss.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But absolutely. And I think coming on the heels of the emails and everything else, it's been a crazy week. People gave passionately. But, you know, and I want to hit one point. That's really, really important. You know, Bernie spoke to us here in Rochester, and one of the things that Bernie pointed out to us is, you know, Governor Cuomo didn't suddenly get behind a $15 minimum wage because he thought it was a good idea. He didn't stop or ban fracking because he thought it was a good idea. People stood up, spoke up, and protested and demonstrated. That's the reason we got what we got in New York. And it just further supports Josh's point and my point. Stay active. Continue to have your voice heard. Don't just wake up every 4 years and hit a lever. Democracy is a participatory system. You've got to be part of it. Otherwise, you don't get to complain.
All right, Sam in Rochester. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah, we were talking about, now you're talking about Bernie and the emails, and that's fine, but none of that's going to matter if people can't get to the polls and vote. And now they have made it harder for people of color to get to the polls and vote. That's what we need to be talking about. That's what we need to be spending our time on. Because you can talk about the emails all you want, but if you can't get to the polls and vote, none of that's going to be any good. And I just have one other thing. Why is Bernie running as a Democrat when he's independent?
Well, Sam, I started to lose you, but on the point of people of color and denying people the right to vote, Josh.
Yeah, I mean, these are the stark differences between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. You know, in Alabama, when that section of the Voting Rights Act was removed, in Alabama, all of a sudden, every DMV that was near an African-American community suddenly was closed. And it became, in Alabama, you had to suddenly have a voter ID to be able to vote in election. And you're seeing all kinds of voter suppression tactics happening all over the South and all over states that are led by Republicans. You see it in Wisconsin as well. So the Republican Party, and they've said explicitly that we're going to do this, and we know this is going to help us get Republicans elected. So, you know, there are differences inside the Democratic Party, but they pale in comparison to the differences between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party.
Let me also say, before we get ready to wrap up, an interesting difference that I've observed that, you know, sort of as working in the news media, I may have a little bit more access to this kind of an issue. But when you see the vociferous Sanders supporters on the convention floor, there is a difference between Sanders delegates and Clinton delegates, not just in who they support. Here's the difference. The Clinton campaign has been selecting mostly local officials. A lot of their delegates are the Joe Morellis, the David Gantz, the Lovely Warrens of the world. And that actually makes it harder for me in the media to call somebody up who's a delegate and say, hey, can you come on the show? Can we talk about this? The Clinton campaign, I'm just going to state this bluntly, is more opaque, harder to get a hold of, and a little more protected. The Sanders campaign has made delegates of people like Kevin Sweeney, who are activists, organizers, a little more grassroots, a little more accessible, so it's easier for me to get a hold of them. But when you see them on the convention floor, they're the ones who have, they're not party officials for the most part. They have been pouring sort of blood, sweat, and tears into this. They're going to be more emotional. And right now the polls show that is not representative of how Sanders voters across the country are planning to vote. But I do think it's an interesting dynamic just in how Sanders and Clinton chose to apportion their delegates. Mm. Kevin, what do you think?
No, I agree with that.
30 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, Evan, now you gave me 30 seconds. Let's look at the independents. That's who's going to choose this election, not the Democrats, not the Republicans. The independents are going to choose our next president, and that should be our focus, really. Let's bring the Democrats together. Let's get the independents out to vote for the Democratic tickets.
Josh, 20 seconds. Final thoughts from you.
It's been a very exciting week so far. I think it's only going to get better from here. I'm excited to hear what President Clinton's going to say tonight. I'm excited to hear what President Obama's going to say Wednesday. And, of course, Hillary's going to speak on Thursday. So it's been eventful. I thought last night was amazing. And I think it's going to be even better as we move forward.
Democrats better hope they haven't peaked with Michelle Obama's speech too early, because that was one remarkable moment.
That was amazing.
Moment. One remarkable moment. But we'll see. And I just want to thank not only all the callers and emailers, Karen DeWitt for joining us from Philadelphia with her continuing coverage of the DNC, Kevin Sweeney and Josh Keaton. They didn't exactly kiss and make up, but you know what? They always answer when we call. Thanks for being here, Josh. Kevin, thanks
thank
for
you.
Being here and sharing your perspective as well. Our thanks to Rob, the engineer, Megan's the producer, Deprina, the intern. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you on Wednesday on member-supported public radio.